This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Would they say they're ahead of schedule? I don't know. These are very ambitious guys who, when they say they'll do something, it tends to happen. And when they say something's going to get better or they'll implement this or that, it tends to happen.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, discussing the town up or down since 2015. I'm delighted to welcome for an interview special friend of the podcast, friend of Telegram, friend of us all, Nick Ames from Guardian Sport, Ipswich Town fan. Nick, congratulations on your hat-trick ball appearance here on the podcast. We last spoke last summer. Could you imagine where we'd be talking about Ipswich Town this time? Well, in March. It's been a crazy season, hasn't it?
It has, and firstly, hello, and thank you for the hat trick appearance. It's a true honour. Nice to be back. Hello. I think everyone was quite quietly confident that it would go okay, weren't they? I think most of us were probably thinking we could be nestling around mid table, maybe this time of year, having a little look upwards in March, early April, thinking, oh, we're 6 points off, maybe we could stick a run together. There were some much more optimistic people who thought, yeah, playoffs, definitely. And I think that includes one or two people inside the club, by the way. I think most of us didn't really have a relegation scrap on our minds. We had consolidation on our minds. And then again, when you get to this time of year, you never quite know, do you? But I don't know that we never did quite know, because we're absolutely flying. And frankly, I mean, we're speaking now at the start of the international break, 10 days or so before the Blackburn game next, isn't it? In any rational season, and I saw someone write this the other day elsewhere, another three or four wins would be absolutely fine. We'd be looking forward to our first Premier League season since 2002. So it's been crazy. I think it's gonna get much crazier in the next 2 months. It's gonna be a bit of a washing machine for all of us, I think. It's getting spun around in the tumble dryer, whatever. I don't think anyone could have quite expected the sheer level of dominance. And I think I remember interviewing McKenna at the end of last season, and I think maybe we spoke just after that. It was either just after or just before. Anyway, I did a big in interview with him after the promotion, and I remember we were looking ahead to this season, and I said to him something like, "Oh, you're going to lose a lot more matches than four, though, aren't you?" And he sort of laughed and said, "Oh yeah, too bloody right we are."
Surprised even him. Well, five, I guess, is more than four, isn't it?
And I'm sitting here, and we've only just lost our fifth, really. I think that tells you something as well.
Yeah, it's been staggering. We're going to talk more about it. Obviously, if you didn't know already, we have spoken to Nick with the Telegram group. If you join the Telegram group, not only does Nick pop in from every now and then, he's a busy guy. We'll talk more about that. But you can hear our chat from June. also available in history is our chat just around the takeover time, Nick, and both of us were kind of bemoaning the state of the club. The trajectory to get us to where we are now and potentially beyond that is pretty rapid, isn't it? It feels kind of unprecedented. I don't know if it's kind of a lightning in a bottle because you've got really ambitious, progressive ownership, but also kind of a once in a generation type appointment in McKenna. It does all feel like everything is in place, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a confluence of on and off the pitch factors. I was actually, and I don't know whether this is a tangent or not, but I was quite heartened to hear Danny Rowe, the Sheffield Wednesday manager, speaking after the thrashing the other day, saying how impressed he was with the setup and the facilities and the way everything looked and felt and was set up for people to work after the game. He was very glowing. I saw a few people saying maybe it's a job application for the future, which I wouldn't totally rule out, actually. But I felt that was really telling, that an opposition manager of a big club, and one that, by the way, a year ago we were, you know, going side by side with in a quite spiky manner, was coming in and saying something like that. And it speaks of how the club has been built up from what, I mean, as we've said a lot before, was a shell, a husk, nothing left. And there's still a lot to do. But I think, I mean, would they say they're ahead of schedule? I don't know. These are very ambitious guys who, when they say they'll do something, it tends to happen. And when they say something's going to get better or they'll implement this or that, it tends to happen. You get that a lot with these American owners, by the way, I think. It's like very highly educated as well, motivated guys who know how to implement and know how to drive things forward. So, yeah, in a way, it's been, you know, a great stroke of fortune to have found McKenna, who, by the way, I think is one of the best managers in Europe, genuinely. Not just best young managers, I think he's right up there in almost every element, and I think a lot of people would agree with that. But I also think he's fortunate that he's been given these surroundings that I think, especially once the new training ground has been built, I think it's going to be everything that a manager could dream of, especially at this kind of level.
Yeah, as Ipswich fans, I'm sure we'd say that. But yeah, objectively, there's a lot of stuff in terms of the stature of the club, the history, but the resources, the catchment area. And generally, the fan base is a little bit more measured. I know that there's people have a kittens about playing out from the back, but I think more and more are getting used to it. And when you go away from home and hear opposition fans, you know, get on the back of Hladky because he's going short, we're like, well, this is what we see every week, guys. You need to get used to this. Let's deal with the season. We will come back to McKenna, and maybe we'll come back to Danny Rule, to be honest. Martin asks a question. What is the view among wider media outside of our fan base, obviously, about our genuine chances of making the automatic promotion spots? Are they still thinking we're lucky and it will all fall away, or have they finally got on board?
Everyone who I speak to, certainly from the newspaper/web/print media, is really, really complimentary, first of all. I think probably everyone has now clocked on. It took a little while, but they've clocked on to how well it has gone, how good the football is. I know quite a lot of colleagues who hadn't spent much time at Portman Road at all for quite a number of years, lucky them in many cases, who have come back and covered games or done interviews or things like that this season, and they've, you know, I've had messages out of the blue from people saying, wow, it's really going well there, isn't it? I think you guys are onto something, to paraphrase, to summarize. So I think, yeah, the club's back in the spotlight. Do people think we're going to do it? I don't know that I've heard anyone make that firm prediction. It's often, oh, you've got a hell of a battle against Leicester and Leeds and Saints, haven't you? But you're doing incredibly to get in there, the kind of thing that a lot of people are saying. But I think rather than predicting whether we'll do it, a lot of people are really pleased and impressed that we're in the mix to do it. And the way in which it has been done is, I think, lost on absolutely nobody now. And I think if you look at where the club was to where it is that people are talking like that in the space of 3 years since the takeover, I would take that.
Yeah, I guess the other thing that is kind of in our favour that maybe the national media aren't aware of is obviously the League One promotion campaign gives us a lot of experience in in putting runs together, but also keeping pace with teams that were seemingly had unassailable leads and catching them back. And Leicester kind of feel maybe they're the, they might be the Sheffield Wednesday, who knows. But people are also looking beyond this season, Nick, some with positivity and some with a little bit of apprehension. Let's start with the positivity, or at least planning for the future. Dan asks, if we are, and Nick asks a similar question, if we are successful this season, what, if any, approaches to style of play do you think we need to make? Our "we'll score more than you" approach at home doesn't necessarily seem sustainable in the Premier League against Premier League players. Your take on that one?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I don't think you become Burnley under Sean Dyche. I don't think you transition to that, or Everton under Allardyce or something like that. I don't think it's either or. But I do think we'd have to discover a little bit more pragmatism sometimes, and a little bit more toughness in certain key defensive areas and that kind of thing. I mean, there's a sort of commitment now, isn't there, among a lot of managers, where you have to be seen to be playing good football from the back, whether capable or not. And you watch Sheffield United, well, Burnley, but I think to a greater extent, Sheffield United, trying to do it, and you cringe because they can't do it and shouldn't do it. And frankly, even me, as someone who wants to watch good football, watch their game against Arsenal the other week, lose 6-0, they're 4-0 down in whenever it is. And you think, if you guys had just stuck a boot in for 20 minutes, you've got your foot in the game and you can do something from there, which sounds a bit old school, but it's also true. Now, I don't think Town would need to, completely shut up shop. I don't think they would need to compromise how they play at all. And I think McKenna will be quite clear on that. But he will know that they'll need to add a bit of steel in certain areas and certainly make sure they're a bit less vulnerable than they can be to the counter-attack. But sometimes as well, that comes down to having better players rather than a different system. And I'm pretty sure that if Town went up, whether it's this year or next year, you would see 6 to 12 months down the line, a team with a lot better players than we have now, much as we really love the current ones, but it's part of the evolution. So actually workshopping that question as I talk about it, I would probably do the old Joe Royal line of it being about players, not systems or approaches.
I was thinking the same. I think you look at Burnley and Sheffield United, possibly what's let them down, or certainly Burnley with their philosophy, which, you know, everyone was really happy and excited about watching last season in the Championship, is to be able to sustain that against better players. You need to bring in better players, don't you? And it does feel like our transition, or our pathway up the leagues, if we were to get promoted, has been super rapid. And you obviously want to give a huge amount of opportunity to the players that have got you there, but you have to acknowledge that the level, you know, 3 years ago, they would have been playing League One football, a lot of them. And yeah, as much as we've recruited for the Championship, it's very difficult to recruit for the Premier League if you want to spend £1-2 million on a player, isn't it? Nick's question's kind of got an angle about McKenna's tactical approach. I mean, you seemed quite bullish about McKenna's stature in the game, above and beyond the Premier League, really. And you mentioned European football, didn't you, as well? It kind of feels like McKenna would figure that a strategy out for that level as well, maybe depending on how he cuts his cloth, obviously. But it does feel like he'd figure that challenge out as well, wouldn't he?
If we got that far, yeah. I mean, he's got experience of it with United, obviously. It's a fairly rarefied level. I think I think if we ever got there, we'd just build, he'd grow, he'd adapt and evolve. I don't see any reason why not. I mean, I'm almost reluctant to talk about that because it's a few years away, hopefully, if it happens. But I just don't have many doubts about the guy in general. And I don't think there's been much reason to have. I mean, look, everyone's career at some point, there'll be a point where you ask some severe questions of you. And that will come. Like, it could come if he's still at Town next season and we haven't gone up and we're not winning 7 games out of 8 and people start moaning. That's how the world works. We all know it. And then you have to sort of go again. And maybe the key to a top manager is how you go again when you've had a period of success and things drop off. How do you build yourself back up? But he's nowhere near that point yet. And I don't have too many doubts about him handling any kind of step up, honestly.
Yeah, and we keep forgetting Man United. Working at Man United, working at Spurs, you know, that's the level, isn't it? Let's deal with this, because a lot of these questions, Nick, and you know me, and people watching, listening know me as well. I really don't like tempting fate type questions, but Martin has asked about what if we don't go up this season and what happens about McKenna. Obviously, a lot of Town fans out there, maybe it's a bit of self-preservation thinking, well, why would he want to leave this fantastic club? And there's obviously an element of truth in that. But we also know that football is quite a competitive landscape, and we know about the interest from Palace and other clubs. Where do you think, if we weren't to go up, who might be realistically interested, and also a reasonable step for him in his career beyond Ipswich, as it were? And, yeah. And also, who do you think Ashton might be looking at to replace him?
Yeah, I think if, when this Palace stuff was happening a few weeks ago, a lot of us, and myself instinctively included, were like, oh, why would he go there? They're in a bit of a mess, aren't they? But you also have to think that as a manager, you have one career. There are only so many Premier League jobs. And when you're at a sweet spot, when you're on an upwards trajectory, you tend to have to keep riding it. Because, you know, McKenna, for example, now if he has two, if in the next two seasons we're in the Championship, he stays and Town are eighth, which isn't a bad outcome, by the way, but that's his moment gone almost. You know, at the moment his star is completely in the ascendancy. So if a job came up, even if it's Palace or someone, you would or I would understand if he felt he had to take it for the sake of his career, because there aren't many of them going around. And there won't be many of them either in the summer, I don't think, which is makes the question even more interesting. West Ham's a very obvious one people talk about. See what happens with Moyes. Maybe he'll win another European tournament to tide him over, but you feel that's coming to an end, and you feel he'd be a good fit for them if they try to do something different. Other obvious one that gets mentioned is Brighton. Mm-hmm. Not sure De Zerbi is too much longer for them from the little bits I hear. And then you think, well, stylistically, both in what Town are trying to be, actually, and in terms of how McKenna plays, there's a lot of Brighton and a De Zerbismo in there. So I'd be interested in looking from behind my hands way if that job came up, put it that way. I think we're vulnerable if we don't go up, definitely. I don't think there's a better candidate in the EFL if clubs look to go down that route. But I don't think it's a done deal that he would go, less because of the idea of not wanting to make that step, but because there won't be many vacancies. So you've got to rely on the two or three max that come up, making him their top choice.
Yeah, and it's an ownership we know that's progressive, ambitious. Yeah. It's his team, isn't it? There's something to be said for some evolution rather than starting again from scratch. So I was hoping you'd finish with a little bit of reassurance, because I'm hoping there'll be a third statue outside Portman, or a fourth statue, isn't it, outside Portman Road of him in once we're in winning in Europe. But yeah, we've done the difficult bit. We can move on. Chris asks about, we're also looking ahead positively now. We've done the tricky bit. What have you seen culturally or corporately from clubs promoted to the Premier League that we should learn from? He mentions, I think this is right, I'm reading his question, so I'm trusting Chris. He's a very reliable guy. The management board of the Premier League is effectively just the 20 club CEOs. So I guess Mark Ashton integrating into that, being able to influence within that. Ipswich has been out of the top flight for 20 odd years now. Nick, what is our ability to get back in there and fit in there and ideally to survive there?
Yeah, you've got to be in there and lobby, haven't you? I mean, there's as we see at the moment with a lot of the discussions which are going on about within the Premier League, about whether it's PSR, whether it's deals with the EFL, which by the way is a disgrace, that entire situation, and that kind of thing. So yeah, you need a strong voice at the table, a really strong voice now, because we know how powerful the top 6 to 8 clubs are. I think Ashton's got that. I mean, he's happy to tell anyone, isn't he? He's a voracious networker, but he is, and I think he gets in the room. He knows people. People know him. And I definitely think he's got a good level of gravitas and respect in the game. I know that sounds a bit nebulous for me to say that, but that's genuinely what I pick up and what I hear. So I think in terms of having a voice at the table, I think Town would have a, you know, a fairly persistent one and an articulate one, and one that is fair and reasoned. Corporately, without going into massive detail, I think Brentford have, you know, shown how you can have a structure that survives promotion, thrives upon promotion. Admittedly, they're having a few more issues this year, but there's reasons for that, I think. Ivan Toney, for one thing, and then can make the next leap upon going up. And also, they've got a very good voice at the table from what I hear as well.
Yep.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
More Premier League stuff. There's a random, so more out there question, random questions to finish with, Nick. Again, well, this is another hot potato, and it'll be interesting to see if Ipswich were to go up and Mark Ashton was to get involved in these conversations, what our stance would be on VAR. George asks, why is there no concerted campaign for its removal from the Premier League in the media? I mean, it's kind of established now, isn't it? The kind of the cat is out of the bag, as it were, on VAR. But any thoughts on that?
It's interesting. I wrote a piece, it must have been 3 or 4 months ago now, but it was before Christmas, about VAR in Scandinavia and how in Sweden is pretty much the last major-ish country not to have it at all, because the fans instruct the clubs to vote against it, and so they don't do it. And it's a lovely Scandinavian sort of democratic system, whereas in Norway they have it, but there is a genuine chance it might get rolled back for similar reasons. Whereas here, can I say it's a classic British thing where people moan a lot and don't take up arms about anything? We can extrapolate that into all sorts of things, football wise and elsewhere. But yeah, I would much rather VAR didn't exist. I mean, whenever I'm at a Town game, by the way, I'm with my mates in the pub before the game, and this season it has come up a lot. Oh God, the worst thing about going up would be VAR. You know, and I'm sure a lot of people think that. Why not a concerted campaign in the media? Good point. I think people do have different opinions about it in the media, definitely. I think some people think it's a good thing, but there's an overreach. I think there are some people who just think it's a good thing. And there are some people who really it's not for them. And I'm in that latter category, definitely. I think it's just adding an extra layer of nonsense, and also nonsense debate, which I don't like. But I was saying a couple of minutes ago that maybe it's not in our nature in Britain to rise up against things. Look at the Super League. Look why that didn't happen. Yep. Everyone got out on the streets, and that is, I mean, whatever UEFA tell you, whatever the ECA tell you, whatever the clubs tell you, the saviour against the Super League was the fans of the Premier League clubs. That's absolutely the case. So I recommend, if you don't want VAR, get out on the streets outside Portman Road on the first day of the Premier League season next year.
Safely.
disclaimer, I'm not advocating a violent protest.
That's not the opinion of Nick Ames or the Blue Monday podcast. Thank you, George, for opening us up for that one. But yeah, I was interesting aside, I was speaking to a Leicester fan as part of Radio Suffolk thing over the weekend, and he was saying, I do wonder if we'd have won the league if VAR had been in place when we were kind of attacking teams with Huth and Morgan and all that kind of stuff. It is interesting to go back and retrospectively figure out what great moments in Premier League history wouldn't have happened because of VAR, but that's one for another podcast. Top 10 moments that wouldn't have been. A failure of the podcast host here, guys and girls. Nick is obviously a Town fan, if you hadn't figured that out by now, but also European sports correspondent for The Guardian. You'd just taken that post, I think, when we spoke to you. How's that been going on? And we've got a European angled question, if you want me to chuck that into the mix as well, Nick. Or do you want to tell us about how you found the new role and kind of where it gets you to?
Yeah, it's been really enjoyable so far. Thank you for asking the question as well. So I took that role on in about July. I spent quite a bit of it juggling it with aspects of my old role, actually, but that's been phased out. So I'm pretty much totally Europe now. It's been fun. There's been a lot of immersion into UEFA politics, especially a bit of FIFA, a bit of European Club Association, a lot of the machinations behind the game, and a lot of insights and building relationships with people who run it. So I seem to have spent far more time in my life than ever before in hotel lobbies in Paris and Geneva and Frankfurt and places like that, trying to get guys over 60 to speak to me. it's been great fun. I was able to do quite a big interview with Alexander Čeferin, the UEFA president, in January that proved quite significant in terms of his later announcement that he wasn't going to run for president next time. Whether he does or doesn't is another issue, but getting into the weeds of that has been fascinating. We're a really important time for football in terms of its governance, in terms of its future sustainability, in terms of what comes next, frankly, in terms of regenerated Super League schemes, cross-border leagues, all that kind of thing. Really, really important. And I think the European football is one way or another going to look very different in a few years' time. I've given quite a lot of freedom to go out and cover interesting stories that sort of dive a bit deeper into the sort of social and political context behind sport and specifically football. So got back from Belgrade a week or so ago. I did a quick piece on the sort of context around the derby there. I'll do something else before the Euros. Went back to Ukraine in, when was that? October, November, for a couple of pieces. Hope to go again quite soon, especially if they qualify for the Euros, which I very much hope they do in the playoffs. It keeps me busy, keeps the passport stamped. And this summer's going to be a busy one with the Euros and the Olympics. But I'm kind of watching the diary completely cram up and sort of having to make sure that I've got the weekend of the Huddersfield game and the weekend of the playoff final completely empty, just in case.
Just need the Huddersfield game. Don't worry about
just the Huddersfield game. But I'm fairly sure that a lot of people watching whatever you do for life or for a living are having a similar balancing act to carry out as well.
Navigating wedding season, all that. Yeah, you mentioned the kind of the evolution of the European game. FPL Tractor has asked, has UEFA's commendable attempt to get more countries represented in European football led to one-sided domestic leagues? I wouldn't know where to start with that one. I'm sure you're much more equipped than I am. What's your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I think it has. I think the Conference League, especially, actually was put in as a way to give more countries, clubs, more good competitive European football, and I think it has done that. But I do think, And I think you only tend to see the effects of things 2 or 3 years after they've started in something like this in football. But talking to a lot of clubs around Europe and from smaller leagues, it's probably harming those domestic leagues a bit. If I look specifically at the Conference League, because obviously the same few clubs are qualifying and putting a lot more money than everyone else. So the short answer is, yeah, I think it's having a massive impact. And I think that's why... topic I mentioned briefly earlier, the idea of regionalized top flights, cross-border leagues, which was another piece I went and did in Latvia a few weeks ago. There's a, you find it on the Guardian website somewhere, are looking more likely, just so that, you know, clubs can have sustainable domestic-ish competition. And it's a shame that European football has been pushed down this route, but it all starts at the top, doesn't it? And the insane amount of money and presence that these clubs have, and everyone else is scrambling to adapt and find a way to survive. I mean, I could talk about it forever.
It's a great question.
It's a really important question, actually. Yeah.
Neil asks, on the kind of the media journalism side, my 15-year-old is looking to get into sports media and working in the industry. Any advice that you'd want to pass on? Maybe any, all of us have kind of got things that we'd have done differently if we get our time again, maybe something along those lines.
Yeah, don't do it the way that I did it. I would say keep reading. Read a lot. Read a lot of news, and read a wide array of news and newspapers, websites, whichever. Try and read broadsheets. Try and read tabloids. Try and listen. Try and watch, and just take in as wide. As broad a church of opinions and media and ways of doing things as possible. I think at that particular age, that's probably the most important thing, to have that diversity of sort of styles and media coming into you. Because I think, and I say this to a lot of people, there's not one linear route into journalism now. You don't have to. I mean, you can have a media degree or a journalism degree, and that is fantastic. But you also don't have to. You can have a certain interest in a certain topic, or be good at doing a certain kind of media, whether that's writing or whether it's audio or producing or podcasts or anything like that. And you can take it from there. So I think definitely, if I was in my mid-teens, I would be making sure that I was taking in a broad amount of media, and I wouldn't be worried too much about pathways just yet, because I think there's an infinite number of pathways into, again, whatever kind of media job it is, a very fulfilling one.
Great shout there. I mean, that advice extends for anything at the moment in the era of social media. It's very easy to get into a bit of an echo chamber and to follow the same sources of information. So yeah, that breadth breeds perspective, doesn't it? So yeah, fantastic call there. Nick, we're nearly done. There's a couple of bits that I'd be failing you if I didn't mention in relation to your career, previous employers, Arsenal. We were asked, would you be back in Ipswich v Arsenal in a face-off in the Premier League next season? But I think we can, I'll let you say in your own words where your allegiances would lie.
I'll be back in Ipswich.
There you go. Just if there was any doubt.
Oh my God, you, folks. What a question.
Well, I'm doing my, at least if we take one thing away from the podcast, Nick is a Town fan and an excellent journalist as well. Where can we find you on socials and all that kind of stuff, Nick?
You can find me on Nick Ames 82 on Twitter.
And occasionally,
or ex formerly known as Twitter. You can find me, sorry, say the other one.
I was going to say, and obviously, perusing the Guardian website.
Yeah, on the Guardian website, we've all got contributor pages if you search. And those are really the two main ways. So yeah, by all means, drop us a line that way.
We'll stick a link in the description as well. I'll end on this one, and you can take us in a positive way or whatever way you want, Nick, to finish on. Your thoughts on how the Town season will play out.
I'm sorry. Goodness.
It's generic as you want.
I wish Wes Burns was going to be fit. I'd say that much. But I think playoff final, and I don't know what on earth is going to happen after that. And it is absolutely terrifying. And I hope it's better than that, by the way, of course. But I just think we're going to post a ridiculous number of points, and it won't be quite enough. I think playoffs are totally back us against even Norwich, hopefully West Brom or someone. And then the playoff final, I don't want to think about it.
No, that's fine. Yeah, my heart is beating already just even thinking about the moment. I think the key thing really is to keep it going to the final day when that Leeds-Southampton game, isn't it? And then anything is possible. Nick, we've gone to some really challenging places in terms of town fans and thinking through stuff. I appreciate that. And we know how crazy busy you are as well. So thank you for giving up the time. Go and follow Nick on Twitter/X and read his great stuff on The Guardian. And I'm sure we'll be back at some point for podcast appearance number 4, Nick.
I hope so. It's a massive pleasure. Thank you. And thank you to everyone who's tuned in.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.